Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Alexander DeSanctis of National Review, who is in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And Alexander, before we get going on the martinis, today, of course, is the State of the Union this evening, a joint session of Congress. The president will be making the speech. Now, they call Nerd Prom the White House Correspondents' Dinner, but I think the State of the Union is pretty close with how the political junkies get excited for this. Although I've also noticed some of the curmudgeons in the political world, like Ala Pundit over at Hot Air, saying that the greatest thing Trump could do to make America great again would be to kill the State of the Union speech and just deliver it in written form. So I know some folks, when Obama was giving the speeches, would have the bingo cards or the drinking game going. What's going to trigger you tonight? What's what catchphrases, what ticks, what meaningless little gestures, either from Trump or from the members of Congress, are you looking forward to?
Oh, man. Well, first of all, I'm, again, not a Trump fan, but I'm super excited to watch the first State of the Union in a while that isn't going to feature Barack Obama. it's just that was a rough 8 years there. And of course, I had to torture myself by watching it every year because that's just the kind of nerd I am. But tonight, I think I'll be focusing probably on the Trump hand gestures. I particularly like the one where he kind of puts up the one, his pointer finger, and the other three are sort of scrunched down in that weird wave that he does. That's one that I get a kick out of.
Yeah, that's good. He's also got, sometimes he'll do the circle. Somehow he does a circle with a point, and it's very interesting how he does those. It's a scripted speech, so I don't think there's going to be too many believe me's into the speech. But if the room gets raucous, you just never know about these things. So
yeah, I wonder if he'll stick to the script. You never know with him.
It's certainly possible. And everybody's got a guest that's making a point for their pet political issue. The president's going to have a variety of people sitting with the first lady, all these different members of Congress, the ones that are actually going to show up. On the Democratic side, or having people to kind of poke the president in the eye. I know the guy who wants to be the Democratic nominee running against Paul Ryan in his Wisconsin district is just going to go there and stare at him. So it's good to know that maturity is on full display here tonight as well.
I think we're definitely going to need to break out the bingo cards tonight to get through this one.
So what do you find most interesting? This will be the exit question on State of the Union. The people who stake out the seats like mid-afternoon for a speech that starts at 9 o'clock Eastern time just so they can get on TV shaking the hands of the president, or the people that as soon as the president says goodnight and God bless America, sprint out the doors to get into the rotunda so they can be the first one on camera to respond?
I think the latter, probably a little more entertaining, but both have their charms.
I also love the people who issue their responses prior to the speech. Obviously, excerpts are given out beforehand, but still fun to watch people condemn a speech that hasn't actually taken place yet.
I'm totally looking forward to the Maxine Waters response. I don't know about you, but...
Well, that's the other thing. We've got several different responses now. It's not just the main Democratic response from Congressman Kennedy of Massachusetts, but you've got a Spanish language one. You've got a Maxine Waters one, like you mentioned. There's one from Donna Edwards, who's not even in Congress. I think there's up to five of them now. So it's good to know they're all on the same page.
Yeah, for sure. I'm definitely going to be tuning into the Joe Kennedy. I think he's the main Democratic response. So that'll be interesting.
Yes, absolutely. But as Jim Garrity has pointed out in detail, giving the State of the Union response is basically a death knell to future political ambitions, from Bob McDonnell to Bobby Jindal to all sorts of other people. So we'll see if that actually remains the case for Congressman Kennedy. Let's move on to the good martini here, Alexandra. And it's not often that we say, hey, it's the good martini. Let's talk about The View. But that's what we're going to do today, because yesterday, New York Democratic Senator Kirsten Gillibrand was on the program, and she is all about the Me Too movement. She's all about cracking down on politicians guilty of sexual harassment and assault, which is a good thing. We just want her to be consistent about that, and apparently she's not. She took a little bit of heat from Joy Behar for leading the charge to get rid of Al Franken in the United States Senate. Gillibrand basically said there has to be zero tolerance for this type of activity anywhere, but especially among elected leaders.
Talk about Trump first. He has multiple allegations, dozens of allegations, over a dozen allegations of sexual assault and sexual harassment. He should resign.
Absolutely should resign. Zero tolerance. All these allegations are out there. So then Meghan McCain, brought up an issue that we talked about yesterday, and we'll talk about again in the bad martini, and that's that Hillary Clinton seemed to look the other way when allegations of sexual harassment were made during the 2008 campaign.
Reportedly, Hillary Clinton is under fire for covering up for a top advisor who was accused of sexual harassment back in 2007. She docked his pay and made him seek counseling, but allowed him to stay on, and women claim his harassment continued. You are a longtime supporter of the Clintons and consider her a mentor. Do you think her response this weekend was appropriate?
Well, as you know, I think these things have to be dealt with, whether you're a Democrat, whether you're a Republican. You need transparency and accountability, and no one is above criticism. But in that case, I don't know all the details. I don't know if the punishment she chose was the right punishment.
And then Meghan McCain talked about Bill Clinton and Kirsten Gillibrand only realizing a few months ago that he probably should have resigned in the 90s.
Senator, you have dedicated your political career to this fight, obviously. And that's why a lot of people were really surprised that it took you 20 years to say that Bill Clinton should have resigned over the Lewinsky scandal. So what do you say to that?
I think this moment of time we're in is very different. I don't think we had the same conversation back then, the same lens. We didn't hold people accountable in the same way that this moment is demanding today. I think all of us, or many of us, did not have that same lens, myself included. But today, we are having a very different conversation. And there is a moment in time that where we can actually do the right thing or fixate on one president.
Can I ask you, do you regret campaigning with him, though?
It's not about any one president, and it's not about any one industry. And if we reduce it to that, we are missing the opportunity to allow women to be heard.
Wow, Alexander, when it's about Trump, it was absolute. When you get the Clintons involved, there's a whole lot of qualifiers involved all of a sudden.
It's absolutely amazing how fast people on the left go from attacking on this issue to defensiveness and just refusing to answer the question. Gillibrand's all about, you know, hashtag me too, until suddenly her political allies are implicated, and it's, you know, tries to cover it up with these sort of smooth talking points, and I guess does a better job than a lot of people on the left at passing it off, but it's so remarkably hollow.
Well, let's talk about the same issue essentially here with our bad martini. And yesterday we talked about Hillary Clinton's lame response to the sexual harassment allegation in 2008, as well as over the weekend when it became public. Yesterday on CNN, Brianna Keeler was interviewing Patty Solis Doyle, who for a while was the campaign manager for the 2008 Clinton campaign and was when this complaint of sexual harassment came up. And so here is how Patty Solis Doyle explains how the issue came to her attention and what she did about it, and then what Hillary did about it.
The incident was brought to my attention, and, you know, I did my due diligence. I interviewed all the parties involved. I looked at the evidence. I looked at some emails that he had sent. I had looked at other documents and came to the conclusion that there was sexual harassment involved, that the young woman was very credible. And my recommendation to the senator was to fire her. And I was overruled.
She was overruled. So the recommendation was to fire. Hillary overruled her. The man at issue here is Bernd Strader, her faith advisor, who then in the 2016 campaign became head of a group called Correct the Record. And in that role, he harassed two other women, one of which ended up leaving the organization because she concluded that she couldn't handle politics because she couldn't put up with his sexual harassment. Hillary Clinton, over the weekend, we mentioned this yesterday, had two tweets on this. She said, "A story appeared today about something that happened in 2008. I was dismayed when it occurred, but was heartened the young woman came forward, was heard, and had her concerns taken seriously and addressed. I called her today to tell her how proud I am of her and to make sure she knows what all women should. We deserve to be heard." And what does Patty Solis Doyle think of that response?
You know, I don't know. I was disappointed by that tweet, that response. It was the wrong call. I wish she had said it was the wrong call. I wish she had said, you know, having to do it over, I would have fired him.
Well, and Patty Solis Doyle seems to have been consistent on this issue all the way along, Alexandra, but Hillary Clinton's twisting and turning shouldn't surprise us. But as we said yesterday, it's certainly inconsistent and hypocritical, to say the least.
Oh, my goodness. I know, to say, well, this young woman had her concerns heard. Okay, well, it's one thing to be heard, but it's another to have them actually taken seriously, not shifting the perpetrator of this kind of misconduct to a different wing of your campaign, but actually getting rid of him, especially when the person close to the situation recommended that you fire him. I think that's an explosive claim, and hopefully Hillary will make another comment on it, but I suspect she'd rather just memory hole the entire incident.
Most likely the case. And Bernd Strider was his punishment was to go to counseling, which he never actually did. And so apparently no punishment whatsoever for him. Alexander, let's go to the crazy martini now. And we had debated making the bad martini today. Just the instant and absolutely certain reaction from left and right about the departure of Andrew McCabe from the FBI. The left assumes that Trump forced him out, and that's further grounds for obstruction of justice or something. And then on the right, it's, well, obviously the FBI director saw the memo, or he's seen the forthcoming Inspector General's report, and it looks really, really bad for Andrew McCabe, and therefore he got forced out that way. We just don't know. But one of the things that came out in the coverage of this story is one of the things that I think makes a lot of people pull their hair out about Trump, people who aren't necessarily naturally inclined to like him due to his personality and in some of his political positions long before he actually became a candidate in 2015 and 2016. But in the past year, there's been a lot of policies that conservatives have been inclined to embrace. But embracing Trump means bringing the baggage along with you, whether it's his tweets or his incendiary comments. And so here's one of the things that was brought up. I believe it was first discovered in this report by NBC News.
NBC News has learned those tensions flared the night the president fired James Comey, who was out of town. He returned to Washington on a government plane.
The president called fuming that Comey would be allowed to take this plane home after being fired. Then he suggested to McCabe that he ask his wife how it feels to be a loser and hung up.
So there you go, Alexandra. He wanted to know whether McCabe had authorized the flight. McCabe actually hadn't, but said if he had been asked, he would have authorized it just to get Comey back to Washington. And then Trump's immediate response is to say, why don't you ask your wife what it's like to be a loser? So his inability to have anyone disagree with him, have anyone take a position that he doesn't like, is absolutely maddening, because if you want to get things done in Washington, you're going to need some allies who aren't going to agree with you all the time. And I think a lot of the American people, especially as they see their paychecks getting bigger here, are inclined to be a little more favorable to him. But when they see what kind of person he is in some of these situations, it makes it almost impossible.
I think that's exactly right. He's just always shooting himself in the foot. And sometimes these comments can be, you know, funny when he's sort of trolling the left, but he often takes it just way too far into personal attacks. And I think that's why tonight's State of the Union might be even less consequential than usual, because he's going to talk about surely all the policy and actual things that have been accomplished, tax reform, you know, the bonuses people all across the country are getting from their employers. These are real tangible things that we should be happy about. But you just know after the speech or tomorrow morning, he's going to, you know, shoot his mouth off again. And that's the only thing anyone's going to want to talk about.
Well, let's briefly close on a note we talked about a lot yesterday, and that's the vote in the Senate on the Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act. As we thought and feared, it did not get to 60 votes. The final vote was 51 votes in favor of the ban, 46 opposed. You chronicled the different speeches during the debate by the senators on Twitter. Anything that stood out to you on either side of this debate as it got closer and closer to the final vote?
You know, I think that the biggest takeaway for me was how much the Democrats had to obscure the facts on this issue, both the science and public opinion polls, which show that more and more Americans are becoming, pro-life and in favor of abortion restrictions. And Democrats can't acknowledge that because the truth is against them. They have to, you know, revert to these very rare cases to defend 20-week abortions, late-term abortions. I think even though the bill failed, it did us a favor in showing how extreme Democrats are and, a chance to highlight that the tide is really turning in favor of life on this issue.
Well, just very disappointing, certainly, that we couldn't get to 60 votes in favor of preserving the lives of people who can feel pain and are viable, essentially, at that stage. But, Alexandra, great to have you with us. I'm sure you've got your drinks and your bingo cards and everything else ready for tonight. Make it a little more of a festive evening. And most of all, thanks so much for pinch hitting for Jim the past couple of days. We'll talk to you here in a couple of weeks.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure.
Alexandra DeSantis of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Jim Garrity will be back on Wednesday. Tune in then for the next 3 Martini Lunch.